Welcome to the 3.12, episode 3.12 of the Shutdown Fullcast. We are currently in the midst of the summer, but this is summer media days, which means that we have the Big 12 popping. We have the ACC on a low boil in the back. We have coaches saying stuff going back and forth. We have actual meta content that we could be discussing this week, which is why it is important that we start with the most important issue of the day, and that is the return of BET Uncut.
What that thing smelled like! I watched that video so many times, and I never actually enjoyed it, but God, I watched it a lot.
Sure did watch it.
Sure did watch it. BET Uncut, the return after years in the wilderness of the most controversial show on BET. Last episode aired July 8, 2006. And by the way, this is how you know it was a doomed franchise. It was hosted by Jermaine Dupri.
Come on.
I can't make a joke about the man's house being repossessed.
Wait, was he married to Janet at the time? I don't remember how the timeline syncs up there. But I can't imagine Janet Jackson would have been thrilled.
Well, BET Uncut did for me hold, I think, the record for the most stunned I have been coming home drunk and watching TV.
Yeah,
because I never came home sober and watched BET Uncut. I always just rolled right into, you know, turning it on and going, forgetting that it was average BET, thinking I was going to get censoring, and then saying, well, somebody's made a drastic mistake.
That's a birth canal.
I just saw
a birth canal on cable.
If you watch the video for Ludacris's Pussy Popping, that was the first time that I turned on BET Uncut. And it was filmed here in Atlanta, and it features a birth canal. There's just a full-on, it's a really great explanation of how everything works down there, and that's exactly what they showed on TV. And I thought it was, and I was so drunk when I turned it on that I thought, I'm making that up.
Yep, I'm seeing things. Nope.
The title of that song, it's accurate.
Yeah.
That also, BET Uncut, I think, probably met its peak when the creation of the video for Tip Drill happened.
Mm-hmm.
Which Tip Drill now being, I think, most notable for the sheer number of Ray Buchanan jerseys in the video.
Do you think Ray paid for that product placement?
Ray rented out his house for the video.
Correct.
So they just showed up and they were like, oh, shoot, we were supposed to bring jerseys? Shit.
Yeah, the mansion that is being used and, like, splattered in fluids for a solid, like, 9 minutes belonged at the time to a pro football cornerback / Christian rapper. Ray Buchanan, of course, did drop a gospel rap album around the same time that the butt crack swiping was happening.
Man, that's got to be a hell of a VRBO listing. You can stay where the Tip Drill video was filmed. We haven't cleaned it.
Warning, there's all these old Baltimore Ravens jerseys all over the place.
Just so you know, the Windex did nothing.
That's exactly. The actual credit card that Nelly used in the video, it's still here. It's not good.
It's not good.
It was never good, really.
It's sealed in amber.
Dust it for prints.
Don't use a black light on any of this house.
Oh God! No.
Any single part of this house.
I think if you did, it wouldn't even like register. Like the black light wouldn't even know what to make look any different.
It's all white. I think that means clean, right? All white means clean.
Good to go.
It doesn't mean seminal fluid everywhere, right?
Yeah, it couldn't possibly. There's no way it could have gotten up on that side of the ceiling. No.
It could be something more benign, like blood from a murder.
That's true. Wow.
You never know.
Wow.
See?
Can't rule it out.
Glad I just made that so much more. Oh, Miss New Booty was also on
That's
Uncut.
True. That was great.
Yeah.
Oh, so many fond memories of, you know, just staying at home by yourself watching strange, strange videos.
Well, see, the best part was being married at the time and coming home drunk. I mean, like, honey, take a look at that. And your wife's like, I've married the wrong human.
Look at this.
This has all gone sideways.
I'm learning about biology.
Look at this. Can you do that? please no, don't do that.
Go to bed. I'll buy you a Ray Buchanan jersey.
You might even find those videos erotic. Oh, can you see the segue? Ooh. It's coming. It's coming. Ooh. The segue's coming.
Wow, is it? It sounds like it is.
Yeah. as erotic as Brett Bielema would find a kneel down at the goal line to beat Texas.
I hope he petitions BET Uncut to like put that up.
No, please. Like, Brett Bielema was single at the time. Do you not think that Brett Bielema does not have an encyclopedic knowledge of BET Uncut?
I'm shocked that we haven't discovered that he was in a BET Uncut video. That would not surprise me if you were just like, oh, yeah, the waiter who comes in and starts slow grinding. That was Bielema.
Slow.
That was
very slow.
26-year-old Bielema.
He was
extremely slow grinding.
He was Bubba Sparks' stunt double.
Oh, God.
We just figured it out.
Hmm.
Done and done.
Wow.
That's where he was. Go back and look.
They call him Mr. New Booty.
He wrote Bubba a lovely letter, moving, and that's how he got the job.
Not moving too fast.
No.
The emotions were moving slowly.
Low and slow. That's how Bielema dances.
That's what the tractor from In the Mud is for. You just get on that. And you move very slowly from video to video. The thing that he found erotic was a kneel down on the goal line after pounding Texas for the better part of four quarters of football. I ask you, what is your moment of football erotica? Jason Kirk.
Wow. Well, like, as far as personal fandom goes, I don't think there's anything that would rise to that level because, like, the only team I really care about is in the NFL.
No.
That's more like...
No, I'm talking the moment in any game where somebody pulls this move or this situation and the hairs on the back of your neck rise.
Oh, I know. Mm-hmm. I know the answer to this.
Well, go ahead then, Rand.
The onside kick when you're already up like four touchdowns, just to be.
Oh, so we're not talking about specific moments.
No. Just categories.
Oh, okay.
Like, oh yeah, we're beating the shit out of you, but we want to get a little live practice in here, so we're just gonna go in onside and eat a dick.
Yeah.
Love it. Or the same thing applies to like a fake punt. Any time where the gentlemanly, sportsmanlike thing to do would just be to kick it away, let the game go on, and you're like, nah, fuck it. I'm going to go for it.
I hate you.
I hate you and your whole family.
Yeah, I hate everything you stand for. Hope nothing but the bad things of life happen to you. Onside.
If you want a specific answer, mine also involves Texas, and it's Texas losing to Jerry Neuheisel. Yeah.
Ooh. Man, that is some niche erotica right there.
Which kind of, to put that in perspective, maybe should calm Brett Bielema down a little. Because, yeah, you beat the shit out of Texas. Jerry Neuheisel will beat Texas, too.
I don't think nothing's going to calm Bert down.
No.
Hey, Texas. Hey, just because you're not Texas's first time, it's still special.
I mean, listen,
Texas is experienced, but that's okay.
They had been that far before, but it didn't matter.
Usually it was with BYU, so.
Which, don't tell anybody about that. Everything BYU did to Texas was an honor code violation.
I think Texas just gets better and better at this. And by this point, Texas is great.
Oh, Texas, you flexible.
Texas does this obscene sex act for the first time. I bet that's not true.
Not so fast.
I know that's what the title says, but come on. there are some things in football that are just like some things in college football. Because by the way, like the day that we had, like online, a bunch of people arguing about like stuff that doesn't matter whatsoever. Some of which we'll talk about.
Oh Jesus, do we have to?
That's what we do.
Oh, yeah, we'll do a little bit of that. So we thought we would actually like take a breather, talk about the good things, talk about the things that sort of make you tingly, right? Mine is the perfectly executed play action bomb downfield.
Mean the one where like the quarterback hesitates for just a second with his back to the field?
Oh yeah, like doesn't give a fuck.
Right, like, as if to say, no, the running back definitely has the ball. Has it.
Like, let's see, 2003 Florida State Clemson.
Yeah,
Chris Winkie pulls like such a great play action move that he actually standing in the end zone, not looking. Isn't even concerned about Clemson finding it. And then he hits, I think it's Snoop Menace. He hits Snoop Menace for like a bomb, like a 98-yard bomb against this. That's Bobby Bowden going against his own son.
Put it on you. Put on you, son.
You're going to come to dad. You know, you better be ready. better be ready, son. Like that or Joey Harrington, Oregon, Colorado. And I think that was the Holiday Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Joey Harrington throws this like dime off of a play action pass. Jeff Tedford was the offensive coordinator at the time. And it just clicks. It's all so beautiful. Like the field just opens up. It looks like, and it all looks like some sort of horrible accident happening to the defense out of design. Oh, that's just beautiful. For Alabama fans, that would be, I think, Amari Cooper in, let's see, the 2013 SEC championship game when they run like 9 times, 10 times in a row and then immediately throw a bomb to Cooper and he's open because Bama's been gashing them on the run. And then he's just, there's nobody near him.
Yeah, like, that was the one against Georgia where it was third or fourth quarter. Everyone's just like, oh, it's coming. It's coming. Yeah. It's coming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think for me, that setup is probably what does it. Like when a team just runs like 12 times in a row and it's like, they just don't care about balance at all right now. They're not doing like the recommended offense thing where it's like you do both things just because they're doing what's working. But you just know that big play action stinger is coming.
I love that. I love the front side sack by a defensive tackle. I'm not talking about the blind side hit that snaps the neck. I am not talking about the front side hit, although that's nice. You beat the right tackle off as either an end or a linebacker and you completely plaster the quarterback. I mean, that's nice. But nothing to me is better than Star Lotulelei had a great one of these when he was at Utah, where you just destroy the guard or center and maul into the backfield, and it's like the unseen footage from Grizzly Man that you never got to see.
That's
you
like, only... yeah, that's some Danny Shelton shit, too.
Oh, yeah, Danny Shelton was great at that. That's some Warren Sapp shit that is straight out of the Indomitian Sioux playbook.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's delightful.
Oh, it is. It's great because there is no subtlety to it whatsoever. A man is destroyed. The quarterback has like the fear of God in his eyes and is just swallowed like Unicron swallowing a planet, right? Just, it's beautiful.
Love you, Galactus.
Love you, Galactus. the cuddliest supervillain. Ryan, what say you?
I already answered this question. How do you already forget?
No, you got another one.
Oh, I have another thing to pick that's erotic?
Of course. Jesus. It's football. How can there not be? I don't think Jason is not off the hook on this.
Okay, I really do enjoy when like dumbass fullback who has no role in the game other than to block and block well randomly, and this only happens maybe once every 5 games, just like leaks out onto the weak side, runs that like unintentional sort of combination sort of flat that turns into a wheel route, and just nobody's catching him. And they're just like, God, they threw it to Jerry. Shit. He never gets the ball. Because...
Jerry, like Jerry from Parks and Rec.
Yes.
He's the fullback.
Running with his unusually wide ass.
They threw it to fullback Gergic. Shit.
Larry, Jerry, damn it.
That's maybe not erotic, but it is sort of like, it is sort of tingly in a different way.
All right. I got one now.
Okay.
It's when a screen gets completely sniffed out, snuffed out, like this real clever screen that maybe it worked last week, maybe it's worked a time or two so far in this game. Either the defensive end just realizes, hold up. They're trying to play me, so he just backs up and gets all in the middle of where the ball's going. Or it's just that heat-seeking missile from the secondary coming in and just annihilating dude as soon as he catches the ball. That's just gorgeous to me. Because, like, screens, most of the time, that's just easy money. That's just, you know, free 3, 4, 5 yards, low, you know, low risk. Maybe you break a big one. So to see a screen actually get destroyed and actually turn into a bad thing, that's pretty beautiful.
Anytime that's an example often of a safety recognizing a play. Anytime a safety absolutely demolishes a play single-handedly, I blossom with joy. Anytime a safety sees what's happening 3 seconds before everyone else and ruins life for somebody, and I'm not just talking about them annihilating somebody, like when somebody tries to get away with a bubble screen and they just blow through the block and intercept it. Oh, Oh, that's active hooting in the household.
I'm gonna go one more. This is not on the field, but it's right off the field. And that is the rare instance where the coordinator starts screaming at the head coach. And it doesn't happen often because it's not supposed to happen. But holy shit, when the coordinator just starts fucking screaming at the head coach, and the head coach is just like, I have to set the example. I can't punch him in the solar plexus. I really want to punch him in the solar plexus, but we're on television right now.
Or just openly assaults them.
Yeah, that's good too.
That's really good as well. I'm very fond of the moment when the coordinator is caught clearly on the verge of a nervous breakdown.
Yeah.
There are two instances I can think of. One, a shot of David Cutcliffe when he was the offensive coordinator at Tennessee and Eric Ainge was his quarterback. They flash up there. The game is on the line. It is shortly before Eric Ainge is about to throw a game-killing and season-killing interception against LSU. Love you, Eric. And it's before, and they show up to the booth, Cutcliffe, and all of the color is drained from his face. Like he looks like a man about to die.
Yeah.
And you can tell that he knows where the ball's going, and he knows what's going to happen, and he can do nothing about it. And he screams out, "Ball!" And as the play happens, like, he knows and he sees it, and he can't do anything about it. It's so bad. The second is a young graduate assistant, Dan Mullen, in the back of the booth on the booth cam as Notre Dame runs out of clock.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Notre Dame, like, Bob Davey lost two games in, like, three games out of three games early in the season once. He lost two of them on time management alone.
That's not good shit.
And yeah. Now look at him.
And now look at him. He's fine. But, yeah, there's a shot where, like, they don't have timeouts and the clock's running out and they can't get a playoff. And Dan Mullen is in the back, and he looks like a man who's watching someone he loves be killed.
This happens. But this look you're describing also happens occasionally to the interim staff that is left after the head coach has left or been fired. And they're just sort of – and you don't have that exciting – West Virginia moment where it's like, yeah, we're going to rally for this guy, where it's just sort of like, oh, no. Oh, no. Everything's bad. Everything's sour.
I was also a big fan of Jimbo Fisher, like, against Virginia when they lost Virginia. Oh, they're out of timeout.
Oh, yeah.
Him just going to his knees and collapsing. Yeah. Like, going to his hands.
Get down there and start terraforming.
Yeah. he was about to oxygenate Mars.
And that's how Minecraft began.
Jimbo needs to sue, man. I've seen that guy's house, Mr. True. Minecraft.
Have you? Oh, I thought you meant Jimbo's house.
No, Jimbo and I.
I thought you had some science to drop Jimbo's house.
Yeah. I mean, there are people in college football I think I could hang out with and be perfectly fine with. I don't know if Jimbo and I'd have much to talk about. We just have to go kill something.
He might be happy not talking, though. Right?
I don't think so. Have you heard him talk?
Yeah, but I always interpret, like, Jimbo Fisher's incredibly fast cadence as, let's just get this over with. Let's just hurry up. Let's get it all done.
Let's get over that. I'm tired of human communication. Just like to get this over with as soon as possible.
Mm-hmm.
We also have another story to talk about. Oh, hey, who's Auburn's head coach, Jason?
Oh, that'd be Gus Malzahn.
Oh, and does he have opinions about the depth of the SEC schedule this year?
Coach Malzahn does have opinions about the Southeastern Conference.
I think we would like to state beforehand, by the way, that we all believe in Auburn.
Sure. Why wouldn't we?
Absolutely. I don't know in regards to what, but absolutely.
I think if there's one thing you can say about Auburn is that they find a coach who can lead them to success, and they ride that hand out, and they let him leave on his terms.
It's true. They're givers. They're a family.
Yeah.
They let things unfold naturally. Every coach has that do not resuscitate order.
You know, it's a circle of life thing.
Do you think Coach Chizik's going to pull through? No, pull the plug.
Nope.
Pull it. That's how he'd want it.
That's what he told me in 2011.
Nope. I'm not even comatose, guys. Pull the plug.
I've seen Cuckoo's Nest. Just scroll. Get down to the end. Hurry up. Fast forward. Just smother him. Go.
Pull it over my face, guys.
No, that's just how his voice sounds because he's all jaw. Keep going.
He's all jaw. You need two pillows. It's a massive block.
It's like, yeah, so it's like you're suffocating Chizik while looking up like, oh shit, Bama's got a new porch in front of the house.
That's why Terry Bowden got out of town.
That's true.
He's like, so Terry, have you updated your will? Out of there. He's a wily little chunk.
Smart man.
I'll hide in Akron. No one will find me there. And they haven't.
That's true. No.
Yet.
He did have opinions, though, Malzahn, on the, because right now, you should know, the SEC always manages to preempt. It's kind of this evil dick move that they do. They always manage, when the ACC and the Big 12 are having their media days, SEC runs all of their coaches through ESPN all at once for their car wash.
Follow-up media days during everybody else's media days.
What a thin fucking premise. To just shit all over other media days. Oh, it's a car wash. You're ESPN. What the fuck are you talking about? Oh, it's the ice cream social. No, you're just being dicks. Just own it.
It's basically the soup and brunch meals that you make out of SEC media days, right?
Yeah.
Oh, these ingredients are old. We'll just call it brunch. Hey, we'll just run it the next week.
We're going to make chicken stock out of this, Hugh Freeze. It's going
to
be great.
It is good that it gives coaches a chance to walk back the bad opinions they had during media days. Like, hey, Coach Saban, thanks for joining us. You said this whiny thing about the NFL draft. Do you want to explain why that wasn't whiny? And then he gets to say, well, oh, you know, it was the NFL Network. It was misinterpreted, blah, blah, blah. He gets to say all the things he should have said the first time around. And it's like they get a whole do-over on media days. It's a media days mulligan.
Mm-hmm. Well, everybody gets to do this. And in his attempt to do this, Gus Malzahn
went ahead and introduced a bad opinion.
It's not his fault. He didn't get that bad opinion out the first time around.
That's true. He's known for not being fast enough, not getting plays called quickly enough.
Well, look, he left something in the playbook. He didn't want to tip his hand.
Listen, haters,
get it out there.
Listen, haters, I'm going to be a contrarian and just say that in the hurry up Gus Malzahn media offense, he's just trying to get another play out there.
That's true.
He's just trying to show you something else you have to be worried about, right?
But another
formation.
But what he said was basically to the effect of, well, it's harder for the SEC to succeed in the playoff format because we have to play in the SEC and not some baby town league like the ACC or the Big Ten.
Yes, per Travis Haney of ESPN. Hey, Trav. Auburn's Malzahn told me he thinks the SEC is at a disadvantage in the college football playoff because of the strength of the league. Others fresher for the playoff as a result.
Do you know what this is? This is when you live with somebody who's not employed at the time. And maybe it's a partner. Maybe it's, you know, a roommate. And that person has responsibilities. Cleaning the house, maybe taking care of children. And you decide to come home after a bad day at work. And you run your mouth to the effect of, well, I'm the one at work all day busting my ass while you're just sitting around the house. And that's when you've stepped in it.
Yeah.
That's what Gus Malzahn did. He came home and told you that you were just watching soaps, Big 12, ACC. Why don't you go out there and get a real job?
While daddy's out there making the kill.
Mm-hmm. While daddy's out there losing the Outback Bowl.
Daddy's out there
going 8-5.
Outback Bowl said we had to put in overtime hours. You think I want to be there? Of course I'd rather be home with you. Watching Dr. Phil, but that ain't my life.
I work three goddamn jobs, including one against Samford, just to put food on this table.
I gotta go on the road to Manhattan, Kansas, just to keep you happy, just to keep you shopping at TJ Maxx.
That's a fair point now.
Oh, yeah,
all right. That's hazard pay. That's essentially charging somebody for coaching and animal husbandry. Because I know what y'all do in Kansas, y'all, and it ain't natural. So this is what Gus Malzahn said, and frankly, I don't even know if there's any point in discussing whether whether it's right or wrong, because you're pretty much just going to decide whatever you believe. I dare think it's possible that Gus Malzahn may be making an excuse, and he may also be right at the same time. It's totally possible.
Yeah, I mean, it's like probably kind of right, but it's not the kind of thing you say. There's like, there's no way for this to come across anywhere near, you know, the correct way. It's not going to do anything but galvanize Auburn fans to be more insular, as if that could be possible. But what like,
what I like about the SEC is so hard excuse is that it insulates you in theory from everything. You lose 9 games, SEC's hard as hell. Don't know what to tell you. You accidentally sell your car because you got drunk. Hey, all that SEC stress. Didn't know what I was doing. Too focused on next week. If I coached in a boom boom conference, I would have been able to focus and not realize that I was listing the car on eBay. I'm sorry.
You wreck your motorcycle with a volleyball player on the back. Hey, yeah. Man, listen, I had to go to Alabama last year.
I recruit in the SEC. The recruits don't come to me. I have to come to them on a motorcycle volleyball officer. Blonde.
Officer, I have to play Florida cross division every year.
What do you have to do?
I like that, by the way. I like that you made him less miles. The drunk or reckless driver is less miles. Like, yeah. Well, of course I was going the wrong way down the road. I got to play Florida every year.
It rubs off at some point.
Yeah, exactly. You're just going to become mediocre by association.
Like, there's
going
there's,
to happen.
There's
less miles driving the wrong way on the highway. Either he does that all the time, or it's like the most unfathomable thing to him. Like, either it's like, this is an adventure, or it's like just a horrifying concept.
Or that Les Miles has never actually been on the other side of the road. That he's only ever driven on the right side of the road, and that he's only made like he's only made circles every time he's driven. Nope, I only make rights.
Yeah, if you're like, hey, Les, wouldn't it be funny if we went into the other lane? Like, it just wouldn't even enter his mind as a possible concept.
I didn't even know you could do that. I don't know where those people are going.
Yeah, I don't even see them.
I don't even see them. I'm focused on going forward.
What? You're crazy. There aren't any people over there.
You could just make a U-turn.
This
what?
This isn't England.
Yeah. I've seen European Vacation, and it scared me off of that. There's no – like, if you look at Auburn's schedule, okay, I mean, it's hard. Like, it's actually – like, it's a more difficult schedule. How you can even say that with a straight face – looking at the Pac-12, it's difficult. I know it's hard. It's even more difficult in light of the massive, stinking, bathroom-wrecking turd that the entire SEC West laid in bowl season last year. You're welcome, SEC West. Hey, SEC East, just holding it down. Just holding it down.
Just worn the fuck out, man. Like John Henry.
That's right. But yeah, they beat up on each other. My favorite, by the way, as always, is the most What About Me fan base. The most What About Me fan base. Because we don't do simple, crude, vulgarian things like saying the dumbest fan base is here on Shutdown Fullcast. No, we're not going to do that.
They're all pretty dumb.
But in terms of the most conceited and or the fan base that's like most willing to grab the mic when somebody else grabs an award and or scream, What About Me? It isn't fair whenever anything happens. Ohio State fans, as always, having the dullest, dumbest interjections, especially when they have a coach.
Who started all this shit? Who dropped the first record? God damn, you have the Cool G rap of SEC shit talking.
You did. Actually, he was more like the Tupac because he did the East Coast to West Coast thing, right?
And then,
like
he faked his own death.
And then he faked. Wow.
Damn.
If we pull up that shirt and Urban's got the Thug Life tattoo.
No, Shelly has it.
Yeah.
That's why you fucked Jim Tressel, you fat motherfucker.
It was sweaters.
See, this is all part of the plan, right? Yeah. This is all part of the long arc of the plan. Urban beat Ohio State and humiliated them so that he could eventually get the job. My mind is blown.
Yeah, and like for anyone who thinks we're being unfair, this is all totally accurate. Urban Meyer invented this whole SEC hollering stuff. Like it had its roots when Auburn went undefeated and didn't make the title game, but it really took off when Urban Meyer took full advantage of it. He created this monster.
2006. Sure, they were close victories. They weren't impressive, but that SEC schedule, boy, it just that in the championship game, just pushing us forward, take a look at who the Big Ten plays. You're going to put them in that title game? Okay, we'll play them. Sure, go ahead.
Makes all those traps in Last Crusade look like cakewalk.
Man. Oh, Ryan has fully melted my mainframe. Going to need a full replacement. New servers and everything. I'm beyond impressed. Anything else from Media Days, by the way, that we need to tackle before we move on to reader questions?
Yeah, I got one thing.
Okay.
So our friend Matt Repchak is at Big 12 Media Days this week, and he spotted a notable former college football coach, somebody who is always on hand, eager to explore new employment opportunities. Helpful man, we might say. He was either there for Big 12 Media Days or the Mary Kay convention that always overlaps Big 12 Media Days, which helps a lot with every lipstick on a pig imagery we want to use for the Big 12's championship scenario. I'm talking about Houston Nutt. And what I want to know is, why do you guys think Houston Nutt was there, and was it for the Mary Kay convention?
I'm going to say that he was under the impression that Mary Kay is a school in the maybe the CAA or the Southland.
Okay, yeah, like a William and Mary. He got William and Mary screwed up.
Yeah, something like that. Okay. Or it's yeah.
Looking for some contacts with this Mary Kay University. I hear they're real visionary people. If they to get the job done, they'll go door to door, just like I will.
Mary Kay's nothing more but a coaching tree, really, if you think about it. And I want to be part of that coaching tree.
I like their colors, the gentle pink. I think it's underrepresented in football.
I got a lot of colors.
Plus, as a private organization, it can't be FOIA'd. I appreciate that as well.
Recruits like the colors these days. They got a lot of them.
They're good at getting people on board. They're good at concealing their schemes. I also assume he was there for a job. That would be it. Continued networking and flesh pressing.
Here's what I hope he was doing. I mean, there are some Big 12 jobs that may be coming open soon. True. But I hope that he went to Big 12 Media Day so that he can go to all the other schools that are maybe thinking, look, we need to make a move, get into the Big 12. They're thinking about expansion. Let's not sit on this. That way he can go to those schools and say, hey, man, I know a guy. I'll get you into the party.
Hey, listen, you hire me. I saw Charlie Strong just a week ago.
I just greased these wheels. I'm not in the fraternity, but I am rushing in the fall.
Either that or like he went there under the impression that when these when these new schools join, they won't have a coach. So mm-hmm. It's like,
yeah. Hey, it's like, hey, it's like an
when
expansion
y'all had that expansion franchise in Connecticut. Mm-hmm. Hey, who are you going to hire, huh?
You need a winner.
I did that Cotton Bowl thing. Cotton Bowl.
I took Ole Miss to two New Year's Day bowls.
50 years.
50 years. Two New Year's Day bowls.
Boise,
Cotton. 50.
Boise State. Papa's coming home.
I built that program.
You know what? He kind of did.
I went like 4-7 there in like 1996.
Sir, 5-6.
Excuse me, sir. Five. Sorry, coach. Sorry,
champions.
Coach.
Don't undersell him by a whole game, sir.
When y'all add them Jacksonville Jaguars out in USF Tampa, hey, listen, that's the school where I dropped in through the rafters looking for an interview. I've already done the reconnaissance.
Pretty literally, actually.
Perfect.
Yeah, that kind of happened. He kind of is Tampa Batman.
Speaking of zombie coaches who can't get work and anymore and just keep plugging. Dan Hawkins, champion this week, by the way.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
Change the national bird. It's a bald hawk now.
Yeah, that's right. Because guess who led the United States team to a championship in the IFAF World Cup of Football?
Do you think there is a coach or even a person who could lead the U.S. to anything but a world championship in American football?
Will Muschamp.
No way. The world would score 0 points total. And
yep,
America
and we'd have
would,
we'd have negative 14.
Would,
I don't know how. We'd have negative points.
Nah, a point would dribble the right way or something.
Sissy Napa intramurals, France.
Exactly. Like, France may not beat us, but if it was like France del Sud.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, then, yeah, definitely. We wouldn't lose to France because, remember, they're on par with us. But, like, Montenegro could, like, waltz in and, like, beat us at home without throwing a pass.
Yeah, they're kind of the raging Cajuns of the world stage.
The point is that Will Muschamp is a horrible head football coach.
We lost to Morocco, y'all. I don't know what happened.
Got bad news, America.
That offense was just too spicy.
That was a field hockey team. I don't even know what was going on.
Oh, you know I can't handle turmeric.
Oh, yeah. I bet Will Muschamp could even say turmeric.
I'm so sad.
He's a brilliant defensive coach, y'all. Good luck, War Eagle, this year.
Yeah.
The reader questions. We should move to those.
Let's do that.
For tonight, because we have a number of them. And I want to start with one of mine, an important case, which is maybe not football related, but we're going to make it that way. Joshua Simmons, at Joshua Simmons on Twitter. Question, does this sound like a cover-up to you guys, too? That would be a story about a spike in leprosy cases in Florida, and experts believe armadillos are behind it. Does that sound like a cover-up to you?
Are we suggesting that the armadillos are doing the cover-up?
I'm going to leave this open to interpretation.
Wow.
I doubt the armadillos are doing it because armadillos are very stupid. You could underestimate them and still be way overshooting their intelligence.
I mean, they're in Florida, so how, you know, comparatively, they're pretty smart.
By the way, that's Florida typically sees 2 to 12 cases of leprosy a year, and boy, you're going to sleep much more soundly knowing that. But thus far, there have been 9 in 2015, and they think it is because the experts, you can hear my finger quotes around this, say that this is because of, quote, people coming into contact with armadillos, unquote.
I mean,
I feel like there's a lot about this subject I don't know, such as armadillos being carriers of leprosy, apparently.
You know, I'm just going to say this, and I know we don't get political on this podcast, but if there's one major political figure in Florida who looks like an armadillo, it's Rick Scott, the governor. Look him up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if there's any man who's probably been spending a lot of time in the woods lately in order to get away from troubles in life and with his job, it's probably Jimbo Fisher.
Oh, man, I thought you were definitely going to go Al Golden.
No. Did you see that starched white shirt?
Jesus.
Do you think Al Golden ever goes into the woods?
Jesus.
That's not a man who functions well outside of a paved path sort of environment.
That's true.
He does.
Al Golden dresses like the man who stumbles upon Dexter's crime scene like halfway through the season.
Whoa!
What?
Yeah, he's a man. He uses a lot of gel in his hair. Has an enormous starched white shirt. He's a house cat.
And much like that character, Al Golden will not make it to the end of this season. So congratulations!
No.
Boom! Dexter references.
Yeah,
we hot.
thus leading, by the way, to our conspiracy theory, next year's head coach of the University of Miami, Lane Kiffin.
Oh, yeah, he does have that sort of that psychopathic thing going on.
And that tone.
Lane Kiffin is handsome in the way that a serial killer is handsome, where you're like, I don't think he's handsome, but enough people do that they are lured in by his trap.
It's that sort of uncanny valley kind of attractiveness.
Right, where you're like, I objectively don't think he's attractive, but, you know, 10 to 15 women who haven't been found believed he was.
Yeah, it's like you look at him and you're like, I see what you're getting at.
Right. I see why this might appeal to some people who don't have a good sense of safety.
Some people who are no longer with us.
Right.
Does he celebrate the minute he realizes that his victims are his victims, right? Like, oh, look. It's a single person walking down a road in an isolated, unlit part of Miami at night.
You look and his hands are already raised.
Touchdown!
Oh, hey. Hey, Tennessee, you need a ride? I'm going this way. What's that? Oh, yeah, there's no cell phone service on this road. Weird, huh? Hey, look, a well.
Nothing bad will happen in the middle of the night to you. Trust me. So I think we agree that this is definitely a cover-up for Jimbo Fisher spending too much time in the woods, bringing back armadillos, handing them to small children in Tallahassee as gifts, and then them contracting leprosy.
So does he think that, like, well, found me some dillos. These will do some good around the campus. These will These will occupy the students and keep them from raising hell.
If I'm going to ban the students for bars, then what am I going to do? I got to give them something. I got to give them an armadillo.
Got to place bars with armadillos. It's the only option I got.
The only thing I can do. I'm going to give them an armadillo. Then I'm going to take it. They can take care. That's how you teach them responsibility. You can't beat an armadillo. You can't rob an armadillo. It's got nothing to rob. You take that armadillo home. Everybody's going to take care of it. They're going to love that armadillo. They're going to learn responsibility. They're going to come back and be a better football player. And they're going to be a better NFL draft pick when they eventually go in the NFL draft and hornswoggle somebody out of at least one signing bonus. That's what I'm here for. That is what I'm here for the university for.
And they're going to know some stuff about science. They're going to know some stuff about zoology.
Jimbo gets Dillo's paid.
Jimbo's going to get an armadillo. Like, he's going to get an armadillo drafted by the Buffalo Bills, man. Browns are going to take him first round. They'll be like, listen, the mobility is suspect. He tested positive for leprosy. His hands need work? Yeah, but, you know, he played in that system.
But he's hard-nosed.
He's got thick skin.
He's got thick skin. I know that armadillo's not all that mobile.
He doesn't walk off the field because he's too slow.
Yeah, exactly. He's always on the field. He's always in the gym because he can't find a way out.
You can't get this kid out of the film room. Literally.
Literally.
You need a gun.
He's trapped.
Or whatever. You need to call pest control to get this kid out of the weight room.
Tell you what, this kid kept his nose clean, too. No run-ins with the law. Did get hit by a police car. That was ruled to be not his fault.
There's no police report, though.
Of course not. It was ruled Tallahassee police's fault.
TPD found no evidence. Fired three cops over it.
Armadillo is named the sheriff.
What a trash heap of a place. Just a garbage scow of a cultural node. So like I said, I hope that everybody is fine. It's not even leprosy anymore, damn it. It's Hansen's disease. God, CNN, you're terrible. Question, Jason Kirk, you got one?
Sure. Let's see. The first one comes to us from our friends at Our Daily Bears, the world's greatest Baylor resource. Could Art Briles get away with the crime, and if so, which? The simplest explanation here is yes, and any crime to which he would, like, personally confess, because the man, everything he says is so confusing that he could try and tell you in Briles speak that, like, he kidnapped the president, and you'd be like, man, that sounds real cool. That's just some real good Texas wisdom you just dropped.
You see the University of Texas trying to kidnap anybody these days? I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't know what he just said about kidnapping the president, but that's just a real cool Texas idiom for, you know, doing your job. Like today, if I could read a briefly extended quote from him today at Big 12 Media Days, he said, "Why do criminals get caught? Because all of a sudden, let's say I was a policeman, I get lucky and catch him walking out of a house. No, it's because I've studied him and I've watched his previous crimes, and guess what? He goes at 10:15 at night, he parks his car two houses down, and he calls a cell tower, and lo and behold, 2 weeks later, he's doing it again. We're watching his phone, and we go catch him. You can't do the same thing over and over again, or you'll get stale and get beat. To me, that's the exciting part. Like I said, I've been doing it since 1979, and I feel like I'm a baby. I do. I feel like a little baby. And if I act up, take my blanket away." That's just good stuff, man. That's just good stuff about football, or I don't know. Shit. I don't know if he just confessed to something or what, but
I think he's telling us that he's tapped Gary Patterson's phone.
Yeah, or at least stolen Gary's car, which, you know, if you can do that to a rival coach, that's the ultimate in gamesmanship.
You do that every time. That's like pillaging their fields.
Hey, planting evidence is just, you know, farming success. I don't know what to tell you. You put it in the ground, conviction grows out of it.
It's just the ultimate play action.
Is conviction something we want out of our children? Believe in themselves?
Multiple convictions?
Play with multiple convictions.
That's right, dang it. Art could get away with it. He'd get away with it in Waco. I mean, think about it. If, like, Waco's pretty lenient anyway, as long as you're the right kind of person.
As long as you don't get the federales involved.
Well, you know what? You can get the federales involved if you're bikers.
You still don't.
I mean, really, you can start a full on firefight. You can literally do anything.
David Koresh had conviction. Tell you what.
There's a man who played with convictions.
I'm a bad person.
Ryan, you're a terrible human. Do you have a question?
I do. This question, let's go with this. This is a sort of a combo question from JD at Giuseppe Johnson. He asks, if Donald Trump wanted to be the head coach of a Power 5 team, which would be the best fit and why? The flip version of that question comes from Matt Berry at MattBerry05. And he says, which coach is most likely to give out a rival's cell phone number at a press conference. Spencer, mm-hmm. I know you already have the perfect answer to the first question. Donald Trump, Power Five head coach.
The most luxurious of universities with the most gold and the most famous people and the highest Q rating with the most luxurious possible accommodations and accoutrement and surroundings, just with a tradition like no other, and prices starting in the mid $8 billions. And also, if you kick this log, it's hollow because there's actually no substance to it whatsoever anymore. And that would be Notre Dame. So congratulations, Trump.
Sad that fat, trashy Rosie O'Donnell can't appreciate a premium football program like this one. By the way,
I kind of already feel like they had Donald Trump as their coach. Because Charlie Weiss, if you listen to the way he talked a lot like Donald
Trump. Schematic advantage. Decided schematic
advantage.
A premium
schematic advantage for, you know, only the most wealthy, the wealthiest of the wealthy alumni who want that premium experience.
These buildings don't have a certificate of occupancy because the Department of Buildings doesn't appreciate good things.
I don't do conferences. Conferences are full of losers, and I don't associate with losers.
I don't do that. Why would I sully my brand?
Yeah, so actually, I was going to say Trump, but you've already had Trump as your coach, Notre Dame. You're off the hook.
Wow. And then who is the head coach most likely to pull a Donald Trump and give out a rival coach's cell phone number?
Steve Spurrier. I think we all
know. There's no question here.
I mean, I wouldn't give out his number or anything, but it is 813-418-9280.
I think it's during his annual salary rundown. Like, he just gives out Nick Saban's phone number.
You call him and ask him. He'll tell you he's overpaid. He told me last week.
Hold on. Let me read off my phone here. Hold on.
I got the text right here. I'd learn how to text just to do this.
He holds up his flip phone. All right. Hold on.
Siri, call Strimpy.
There's also the matter of the person who might give it out on accident. Like, I feel like Spurrier would just give it out of pure spite. But then there's the guy who might give it out on accident.
Incompetent.
Like Tim Beckman or something?
Tim Beckman. Because I feel like somebody could just, like, Tim Beckman would be reading a statement, right? And the statement would have, like, the contact info written in there. And he just wouldn't stop reading, right? He'd be like...
He's reading the letterhead.
Right, exactly. He's like, University of Illinois, Coach Tim Beckman.
Thank you all for coming here for immediate release.
I like that Tim Beckman just became like Cookie Monster Anchorman.
He's the white Dikembe Mutombo, basically.
Lasagna.
Of course he is. I've always said that.
Lasagna!
Who wants to copulate with Tim Beckman?
Who wants to commit to Illinois?
No one? Okay, I'll leave. This is an Applebee's in Indiana. Bye-bye.
There's also the possibility of Kirk Ferentz doing that and, like, no one even hearing because no one listens. No one's listened to a word Kirk Ferentz has said for a good 7 years.
Jesus, I mean, he's just been reading Social Security numbers for years. That's all the playbook is.
Kirk Ferentz is bought and sold by North Korea.
We make jokes about different people being the Zodiac killer, but suspect number one, he's probably – go back and look.
Look at those beady dead eyes.
Go look in some old – transcripts of Iowa press conferences. I bet he's confessed to it.
I bet he's more of the BTK type, where it's like, oh, yeah, he just seemed like such a good neighbor. Little did we know that he was maiming people we knew in our community the whole time.
Yeah, the glowing thing that comes out later, like they always do whenever the killer's a white guy. Like, it wasn't so bad. It's like, parents, there's like 20 quotes, like, he was the most boring guy on our street, and we live on a really boring street.
When's that going to get old, by the way, when somebody's like, yeah, he just seems so boring and flat? I'm like, of course, he's a serial killer.
Next time on Unsolved Mysteries.
That should have been your clue, dummy.
Yeah, like, oh my God, this man participated in the community and dressed up like a clown. I'm like, yeah, of course he killed people.
One man went to multiple Outback Bowls, but his neighbors never suspected that he was a killer.
They never knew he was responsible for the deaths of so many Iowa games. I had no idea he was the Iowa coach. If I'd known, I would have called the cops.
Dude, stop singing that theme song.
Yeah, was that the Unsolved
Mystery? Stop, that's scaring the crap out of me.
I'm picturing aliens. I'm sitting in the dark in my backyard.
I am. No, I'm
looking around right now.
I'm by a pair of really dark open windows.
I'm Robert
Stack. Man.
Tonight on Unsolved Mysteries, the Hawkeye Killer.
Rob Stack.
Hawkeye Killer.
The Scourge of Iowa City.
Three undefeated seasons walked into a restroom and were never seen again.
Remember when he was good a decade and a half ago? The Blind River Killer.
God, we've really focused on serial killers a lot tonight.
Ah, well, it's that time of the year.
It's July 21st.
Hooray, it's hot.
Yeah, yay. Let's see, I think we have time for like two more questions.
All right.
Sure. I'm gonna do a quick one. That's from Corbina Smith here. Wanted to know, since Ryan tweeted out final call for shutdown full cast questions and tagged Circuit City,
of course,
a now defunct box.
I'm sorry. Full. I don't know what's wrong with me.
Well, earlier we tagged the defunct Hulk Hogan, so.
That's a gawker.
I do like that the Circuit City account, its profile right now, it's at Circuit City, Inc., it says, Tiendas de la Ciudad Circuito. Estar atentos a los anuncios. Circuit City, just lo que necesitaba.
Hashtag just lo que necesitaba.
I think, and it's got 291 followers. I think you found like a Spanish parody Circuit City account.
It's possible. Maybe.
It's last. Its last tweet was from like 5 days ago, and it's like the British Open is the only reason I like that Scotland didn't leave Great Britain. So
damn, yeah. That's a hot take, Circuit City Inc.
I know.
I think it's legit.
Corbina Smith at Corbina Smith wants to know if we price match. We do not price match.
Sorry.
I mean, we do because this is free. So. Yeah,
we'll match. We'll yeah.
Yeah. have you been putting this on your tax forms? Have you been declaring this as income? Shit. Have you been borrowing against this podcast? You get a HELOC?
Yeah, I've been. I got. Yeah, whatever that is.
Good enough for Georgia.
That's cool.
Any other questions, gentlemen? I think we got time for like one more.
Okay, we'll do this one from our good friend Dan Rubenstein because it made me sad. He wanted to know. Given,
oh, that sounds good.
Given your current sizes, how many different positions could you bulk up or lose weight to play? And what this led to in the SB Nation and New York City offices was looking up my current height and weight and comparing it to NFL players of yesteryear. And I learned that I should be LaDainian Tomlinson. And I am not LaDainian Tomlinson.
No, LaDainian Tomlinson was dense. Like, super dense.
Spencer should be David Cobb.
Which is about right.
Yeah. And Dan should be I guess like a not very good cornerback who's had mono for a month. That's who he is. But if you guys had to, in your current states of being, bulk up or lose weight, what position could you play right now? Not necessarily well.
Like not necessarily tomorrow, but like
no.
A few months from now.
You got a couple months to decide, yeah, I'm just going to like put on 30 pounds and, you know, be the saddest right guard in the world. Or go the opposite direction and try to be lean and mean.
I could give you some time at safety. I could return a punt or two.
Okay.
Okay, I'm H-back. I could get up to H-back or fullback.
Okay.
Because I'm at about 5'11", 222 right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I could easily gain 20, get up to about 240. And I'd have a play and a half, maybe, in me of really
a hell of a play.
Boy, if you've ever wanted to see an ACL fly off, like a rubber band shut from the fingers of a fourth grader into the stands. That's what you would get to see. But I could probably bulk up to be a decent sized fullback, H-back, that type. Additionally, I hope to run no more than 3 yards at a time.
Yeah,
that's good. Like H-back, you already got like you're like halfway to the line already.
Right.
I think I am best suited to be tight end who always runs his route 3 yards short of the first down marker.
No, you don't, dude. You know who you could have played for? You could have been one of those tight ends for Michigan that always ran like the waggle.
Oh, my God. Oh, yeah.
Like, Ryan, I feel like you could be every player on Kansas State. They're all exactly the same
size.
That's
true. Oh, my God.
Dude, you could be like a cast-off Gronkowski brother. You could be like a you could be the Gronkowski bastard.
Could you be a pass rusher,
wide receiver, anything.
Oh, my God. Is it too late to, like, retcon my life?
Yeah, it's too late.
Shit. Thanks, Mom.
The eighth Gronk. The long-lost Gronk.
The worst Wu-Tang album ever. Straight from the eighth Gronkowski!